Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of RealCom Live. We got a great show for you this week, and boy, it's been a crazy week. Just got done literally this morning finishing up a virtual conference with ControlsCon. Great, great event. One day physically at the event, and this morning finished it up virtually, and now jumping right on to RealCom Live. So seems like there's a lot of conversations going on out there. Just had a great conversation with Google and with the University of Kentucky and some other great mega projects that are really pushing the envelope as far as smart, intelligent, connected. And this show is going to follow suit. We have got a phenomenal show. We're jumping back over to Europe this week, and we're going to be learning about a project in Milan, Italy, that is nothing short of extraordinary. It is a smart city, a smart district, a city inside of a city, and the vision and the level of innovation that they're going for is extraordinary at every level. So we've got two great guests today, Andrea Rückstuhl, head of Lendlease Continental Europe, and Susan Constantine, head of Podium Construction for Lendlease Europe as well. And these two individuals are really the leadership that's going to drive this innovative project, which I believe is going to set standards not only in Europe, but literally around the world. So before I bring them on, I'm going to show you a short video and give you a little overview of the project, and then we're going to jump right in. All right, with that, I'd like to bring on my two great guests. Hello, how are you? Good to see you.
And hello.
Hi, Jim.
Great to see you. And Susan, I apologize. I think I left the word development off your title. It's head of Podium Construction and Development for Lendlease Europe.
Thank you.
So first of all, I do want to let our guests know that you are coming to us from Italy, correct?
Correct.
So has spring sprung and you're working towards summer? What's it like in Italy right now?
It's a beautiful day today. It's really sunny. We say it's a chilly 18 degrees to 20 degrees this afternoon, but it's going to be better over the next few days.
Yeah. How about you, Susan?
Yeah, same here. It's been a beautiful day. It's good to see some springtime and things are opening up a little bit. So it's nice to have a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. California, same here. We've had some warm weather. We've had a little cold spell, but it's looking to warm up. And I think everybody is looking forward to getting outside, breathing some fresh air, riding a bicycle or taking a walk. It's been a long haul. And I think people are yearning for that opportunity to get outdoors. So, well, thank you for taking the time to come on today's show. I mean, I know how busy both of you are. And, you know, when we first started talking about this project, obviously, you know, we follow a lot of big projects around the world, but I was fascinated by a lot of things, you know, Italy, Milan, and you know, the size and the scale of the project. So why don't we have you take us through a couple of slides just to get the audience orientated, and then we're going to jump right into a conversation, and I got lots of questions for you.
Okay. So here I start. What we see here is the master plan. This is Milan Innovation District. It was the former land where Expo 2015 happened. So we have a history as well. So it's actually a conversion from a brownfield site that we used for a great event back in 2015, which was a great success, bringing people around the world on the theme of food, climate, and quality of life. And again, the idea here was to bring together that legacy, actually convert that into something long-term. It is a public-private partnership. So again, it's a 99-year agreement between Lendlease and the different layers of the government in Italy to deliver what is what you see here over a period of 6 to 10 years, and includes some great public anchors, including hospital, a university, a research center, but also it's actually trying to interpret a community of innovations, a community of startups, large organizations coming together, collaborating amongst the different public and private infrastructures that are going to be delivered, but also trying to taste a city life. So that's one element that we try to incorporate in our design. Being in Italy, being in Milan, cities for us were designed thousands of years ago. So we had to look at as well delivering something unique, bringing that city life as part of our design, but also looking at other things as innovations at the heart of what we are bringing together as a community, but also in the way we look at this place to be for the next centennial, 100 years from now on. So how do we really incorporate the best of the solutions today, but also how do we have a place that can adapt and change and incorporate the future solutions, so that we are always trying to create the place for people where they can actually work, live, and play at their best. So if we go to the next slide, this is actually to show you the big, elements of the project, 100 hectares, a million square meters. Again, you'll see it's a mixed-use, truly urban environment. It includes as well part of the project as being a conversion of the existing pavilions that were actually there for 2015 Expo. And we've got works progressing in all fronts. We never stopped through COVID, and that's the other element which actually makes us proud. So we kept on working and delivering this beautiful project. If we go to the next, it's a little bit of a snapshot of what we call the five anchors of the place. And I mentioned them quickly. There is a university with five scientific faculties, 20,000 students, a research hospital, 500 beds, 10,000 between doctors, researchers coming together. Human Technopole, a great foundation that brings genomic, structural biology and data at the heart of what they are doing. 1,500 researchers from all over the world coming to collaborate. It's research, but it's also collaboration with industry and startups. So it's a great open system for collaboration. Fondazione Triulza is actually an association of 60 not-for-profit organizations that represent the territory and the civic society, which are forming part of the strategy, the design, and the engagement with stakeholders. The last, it's Federated Innovation. It is actually the asset. Yeah, we can go to the next slide. It's easier to explain. We created, while we were doing planning and while we were still at the design board of this project, we created a community that came together to really innovate as an engine. As you see, this is a design of an engine that brings together public, private research and all the infrastructure around innovations, but large organizations, SMEs and startups collaborating together. This is actually a company, so it's a formal legal entity created. And actually the principle is really cross-contamination among the different industry and sector, as you can see, a number of sectors, specialists collaborating and actually working to bring forward innovation programs together. A great opportunity to really start looking at this project from community design and then layering on architecture and building and physical. So it's basically community first and then physical after.
Very good. So, got a lot of questions come to my mind when I see the scope. And this morning I've literally been looking, from Google's global portfolio to the University of Kentucky. That was my morning. Now to a city within a city in Milan. This whole smart building, smart district, smart city thing is really catching on, right? And so the obvious question is, every big idea has a first step, has a first idea. Where was the genesis? Who was the person? Where was the meeting? Where did the idea come from that it's time to do something this innovative in Milan, Italy?
I think it was a combination of elements, but clearly the government was looking to do something unique after the Expo. And so there was, I recall probably a meeting in 2015, actually during the Expo. where our, at that time, Prime Minister had a meeting with us in Sydney, and we orchestrated a meeting during a G20 global meeting. So it was an opportunity to have all the governments around in Sydney. And we had that conversation, and we look at what could be the future and how we can actually design a city that really brings the best of knowledge in life science, in technology, and all designed for human beings. So how can we create a place that interpret that? And why Milan probably is, again, a combination of opportunities around this research center, the human technopole, that the government was starting to think to fund, and that would become the home of that whole idea.
So the genesis wasn't necessarily Lendlease first, it was the government, somebody inside the government saying, we've got this big parcel of land that had a particular use and we need to do something with it. And then they brought in Lendlease and said, with your global experience and your vision, what can we do with it?
Correct. And it was a combination of, we brought together 20 local stakeholders, our best colleagues from around the world, and we actually match the global experience of Lendlease looking at big sites and interpreting urbanization trends and everything else, but also connected with what is it in Milan that works, what it is important to actually incorporate. And that mix was fantastic. I think convinced everybody at the beginning, and that was the genesis, I guess.
Yeah, well, and again, the question begs, a lot of great cities in Italy, why Milan and not Rome? I mean, obviously the project was there, you had a piece of land, but why Milan? Did it offer something unique?
I think, yes, if you look at Northern Italy, and if you look at the greater Milan, as we call, so 10 million inhabitants, it's actually home of a lot of global companies, but it's also home of a number of universities. We've got a very large population of talent. We've got very what we call the powerhouse of Northern Italy. So it's a small enterprise, it's very agile, very innovative, and so we had up all the basics to really think to create a place that can actually grow on the strength already existing into the sector of life science and technology. And so we had everything, and we had the mix. We had the raw materials, if you like, if you go on cooking, raw materials that were very good. And we just had to think about a receipt. And again, Italy is a good place to think about food.
Yes, it is. Very good food. Very good. Susan, obviously an American who's made her way over to Italy for some time now, works with a great global company. How did you find your way into this project, and what is your role?
Sure. So again, I think what I've been very lucky in my career to be part of a number of innovative projects through, and that's what's actually brought me to having been able the opportunity to travel and go on site and be part of actually building. And that's actually something I really like to do. I like to be part of seeing something go from nothing and literally, being at ground where there's nothing there and building and seeing a community thrive years later. So that's a little bit where I joined. And so I joined Lendlease as part of a new business unit, Lendlease Digital, where we're developing a tool and a platform called Podium. And it's a property platform. And the idea is we're really trying to change the industry. And so I'm able to have the benefit of coming to mind to bring that experience and run with this initiative and starting from the ground and building this up as well. So it's a great opportunity to help build this out and build out the project together.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and I got a whole bunch of questions when we come back. And again, I want to thank both of you for being here. All right. As you can see, a lot of great solution providers and vendors really stepping up to the task of being able to deliver on the kind of projects that we're all talking about. Let's get specific. There's obviously a lot of large projects now really seeming to come out of the ground around the world. And it's easy to talk in large concepts about smart, intelligent, connected, eco-friendly. Give us some specific examples of how life will be different inside this district, whether I'm working, whether I'm playing, whether I'm getting educated. What are some of the technologies you're going to bring to bear, they're going to, you know, provide for a more innovative future.
So I think it's really one of the first time where you can really, you know, exaggerate, but play with the 60, 70,000 population new city and really design that from scratch, is really trying to bring technology that is not a technology first, it's a community first, where technology is helping to deliver a better quality of service and use. There are many examples. We are, for example, designing a totally fossil fuel free city. So we are bringing technology to deliver all the energy systems throughout the site. So a site-wide energy with no fossil fuel, so fully renewable. And clearly we've got systems with low temperature data collected. It will be seamless in terms of the experience from the utilizer, but it's really bringing new technology into how we can deliver a city scale solution for energy. Again, connecting to the backup systems, batteries, we are talking about green hydrogen, backup plant integrated. We are talking about green mobility, so there are not going to be cars on site, and we are looking at hybrid solutions with driverless and standard cars, but all electric. But how do you integrate all the systems to make sure that the use of energy, it's really balanced? How you really look at days, nights? You've got a hospital, you've got a university and research, but you've got residential, offices, retail. So you've got very different uses at different hours of the day. So you design really to optimize the system. And it's very difficult to do unless you have a very detailed ability to collect data of use of the buildings and learn about the uses and the time of use and the frequency of different activity and actually make that system efficient and efficient over time. I think this is one example, integrating that and our ambitions to be carbon zero, net carbon zero by 2040 can be achieved by technology, can be achieved by selecting renewable, but also by making people understand how they can behave in order to achieve the target. So there will be a component of knowledge sharing and cultural experience around these changes that the population will need to do in order for all of us to achieve these targets.
Susan, anything you want to add on to that?
Sure. I think Andrea summed up pretty well, but that's a big part of what we're trying to do. It's getting down to the layer of the inhabitant. So we can set up a system, but it's how do we set up that system to get ownership on the future? And who are the people who are going to, how do the citizens take ownership on that and make them feel a part of that? One of the big differentiators we're trying to do too is it is that integration. So it's not about the number of technologies and the number of tools you bring to the table, but how do you bring the fact that, again, knowing that the fact that we're going to be here for 99 years is starting to look at new technologies. What the technologies that are on the table and available today are not going to be what are going to be there in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. It's changing at rapid speed. So how do you make that come seamless? And so the new technologies come to the user in an easy and tangible way that you can digest it. And I think that's sometimes simplicity is your greatest challenge. And I think that's one of the pieces we're looking to do.
Right. And when I look at a project of this scope and I think, okay, hospital, major one of the tenants, are you going to ask, force, induce, coerce, beg the hospital to be innovative in its own right? I mean, are you going to say, okay, if you're going to be a hospital within this district, you have to bring the most innovative medical technologies? Is there going to be a theme that all of the inhabitants will embrace?
Yeah, I think it was very good at the beginning when we started to collaborate amongst us all. It was sort of, we created a strategic committee, a governance body, and we actually are giving ourselves, an agreed visions for the future. And so we're all contributing to that. And so we are collaborating. For example, some of the themes of innovations is around future of medicines, personalized medicines. And you have the, you know, the university with the medical school, you've got the research center and the hospital collaborating with some of our federated innovations companies that are coming there really to look at how we can evolve in this sector. But in itself, the buildings, they're all taking a chance. It's a bit of a race now. Everybody is trying to do something better. So the hospital in itself has got very new solutions for patients, and they're bringing very new technology as well in the way they are going to operate the hospital. So, and they're taking benefit of, you know, the technology, and they're taking benefit of the community of companies that are there, that are really all there trying to push the limits, trying to push the
community of innovators, basically a community of innovators. Yeah. Exactly. Which is something that, you know, it's easy to say, you think you understand it, but so many of these projects get one or two innovators, they build this big project and then they expect regular people to come in, and it doesn't work. You've got to reach out for those people willing to take risks.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we're going to run out of time. So I want to make sure we get to the question of, you know, what do you tell your fellow developers, you know, who are doing projects of this scale around the world? So, you know, if you were having a glass of wine and eating some great Italian food, and you're saying, look, you know, I've been doing this a while, you know, it sounds great on the brochure, but here's some advice I would give you when you're trying to innovate at this scale. Andrea, why don't we start with you? What would you tell them?
I think it's to embrace the opportunity and not try to think you've got all the answers. And, you know, some of the lessons I've learned over the last 2 years is that if you are true to your mission in creating these innovation places, you should really be part of that community. And so a lot of the challenges we're having, we're throwing back into the community. And we are finding so many answers from unexpected players. We're doing great innovation with a defense company, with life science company. We're doing some project. And I would have never thought from our, you know, background in real estate that they were the one potentially giving us answers. So embrace it and live it through, and you're going to be surprised.
Yeah. Susan, how about you?
Well, I guess what I would say is what is important to us is we look, you know, what we're trying to move is moving towards autonomous. And we're looking at how we're autonomous through the life cycle. And that, you know, most developers, and if you are the owner in this case, having that data throughout the life cycle from design through assembly, operations, and then the experience, you have a lot of data. And so data is very powerful, but on the flip side, it's not about the quantity of data that you have, it's what you do with the data. And so that's, I think, what, again, is part of the journey is how do you have the opportunity, have the right data scientists? You know, there's a lot of buzz around AI and machine learning, but, you know, if you're not looking at and creating the right algorithms, you might not get the right information out of the data. So, you know, I think one of the takeaways would be data is powerful, but be careful how you use the data and what you're doing with the data.
And especially with people who don't have a lot of experience with data and are encountering it for the first time, there's a lot of potential pitfalls. But going back to Andrea's point about listening to everybody, I mean, the real estate community, you know, it's a tough job. It's a lot of risk, has a reputation of being pretty stuck in its ways, doesn't need any advice. You know, leave me alone, let me build my buildings. But I think those days are coming to an end, because to your point, you'll get answers to questions from people you never expected, as long as you're willing to listen. And I think that's a very, very important point to take away from this conversation. So, all right. Well, I told you it was going to go fast. We are done. We are out of time. We're going to come back. We're going to have you back. We're going to dig into this project in a lot more detail. As you guys progress, we want to progress along with you. So, thank you so much for being with us. I understand it's probably later in the day in Italy, right? Isn't it close to the end? So you can go have your glass of wine. We're just finishing breakfast. But thank you so much. And we look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thanks again. Really appreciated being here.
Be well. All right. With that, let's get to one of my favorite parts of our weekly conversation, and that's the news. With Howard Berger, and he's going to give us a little idea of what's going on in the world of real estate technology. Hello, Howard. How are you?
Hi, Jim. And thanks, Andre and Susan. Great story today. So I'm going to dive right into it. Every week, we highlight a few of the stories from our weekly news briefing. It's released every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And our lead article this week features some insights on seven real estate industry megatrends, written by Olga Korolyova, and she's founder of Capital Brain. She's been applying AI and machine learning to real estate processes like acquisitions, asset management, investment sales, now running a quant real estate investment strategies. And Olga's a world traveler, and in this article, and adventurer. And she brings her global perspective to detail seven major megatrends that are going to be shaping our industry going forward. And I'm not going to go into detail here, but you'll find some interesting and some very unique examples of applied innovation throughout the article. Next, I want to shout out to this week's technology partner, Yardi. And in this article, Brian Sutherland, VP of Commercial Sales for Yardi, Brian examines some diverse responses from a number of CEOs on how and when they believe their employees should be returning to the office. So, as you all know, attitudes about return to work are all over the board now. Some CEOs have been increasingly sharing their views on the downsides of working from home. So, citing that culture, collaboration, and coaching, which have been the pillars of success for growing businesses, have been difficult over the past year because personal interactions have virtually been eliminated. For one example, Jamie Dimon, JP Morgan CEO, says that remote work's eliminating spontaneous learning and creativity. Feels that 90% of his employees are going to be back at the office full time, which in the article is a position that's backed up by a number of his peers. Good, great read. Suggest you have a look at that. Since we're running low on time, I'm going to go right to this article. It's not exactly on tech, but that's an interesting story, especially about adaptive reuse of existing space. So retail malls have been struggling to revive themselves, but they may have found a new category of tenant. Lately, some publicly funded charter schools have been chosen to take space in shopping centers. And these schools often can offer a bit more rental income stability than retailers. For example, Central Queens Academy Charter School just signed a 32-year lease for 85,000 square feet in a mixed-use project in Elmhurst. And Watsonville Prep School in California is looking at space at a former Godshots department store. And as an added bonus, the students could also provide some increased foot traffic in malls for food and shopping. So it could be a win-win. So with that, 10:30, I'm out of time. That's it for me today.
Yeah, that's a lot of world news in 3 minutes, right? So you're getting pretty good at it. I would encourage everybody to take a look at that news brief because Howard and team do such a phenomenal job dissecting the hundreds, thousands of stories each week and trying to bring the relevant ones up that are good for you Monday morning. So thank you again for doing that, Howard.
My pleasure, Jim.
All right. So before we wrap, we're going to hear from our final sponsor, and I'm going to come back and tell you a little bit about next week's episode.